Fearscape Media Network, exploring the unknown, one podcast at a time.
Fearscape Media Network is your new home for everything weird and enlightening. Check out podcasts and YouTube shows covering content from discussions on horror films to the paranormal to meditation. Find out more at fearscapemedia.com.
Welcome, everyone, to Unsensitive, a show where we take a subject, talk with an expert, and we break it down into questions that maybe are normally too impolite to ask to a regular audience. And I am your host, Ray Robinson. Today, we'll be looking at the reasoning behind the movement behind defunding the police. This has really become a big hot topic issue this year, especially following the tragedies around Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, and many others. And joining us today in the hot seat to discuss this issue is Doug Lowry of the Sowers of Justice Network. Doug, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks for having me.
Now, let's launch right into the words defund the police. When people think about that, they think about the fact that that defunding the police means getting rid of the vast majority of the police. So what does defund the police actually mean?
Defund the police really is a powerful question. It's a fuzzy conversation, and people get mad in part because they do understand it and in part because they don't understand it. Behind the question, defund the police, is, are the police doing what we pay them to do? Are we paying policemen to kill people or to keep the public safety? And depending on which side of a political or racial divide you are, you see and hear that question very, very differently. So defund the police for the people, for communities of color, for Black people, for Latinos, for poor people, it means stop spending my tax money to oppress people. A good example in West Louisville, a prominent local pastor was stopped in a nice car in the West End and didn't look like he was doing anything wrong. And we call that racial profiling. The police said that wasn't what was happening. And there are multiple other instances in Louisville about where people get pulled over. And where they get pulled over and how they get pulled over in a Latino community like Beachmont or Fern Valley Road, or a Black community like all the different neighborhoods in West Louisville, Parkland, Portland, all the way over to the river in Shively. There are people who do feel like they're being policed differently. So the question is, do we want to spend our money? Do we want to deploy our money in a way that harms communities of color? But there's a whole nother group that has nothing to do with race and has nothing to do with economics. Just this last month, a person who was having a mental health episode that the family couldn't manage. The family called the police and the police shot that person dead. That was in a nice white neighborhood in the East End. So a lot of us don't really think about the negative consequences of having police. I happen to work for a major telecom company. And I get calls all the time from people who are saying, oh my God, I need somebody to help me because the police keep showing up at my doorstep at 2 o'clock in the morning because my phone line is calling 911. So most of us, when we're having an emergency, we do want the police to show up. But when we're not having emergency or we're having a different kind of emergency, we don't want the police to show up. And there are lots of examples of people who've had unfortunate incidents with police. So part of the question is, what type of policing do we want to have? Can policing be reformed? And are policemen and policewomen held accountable for their actions? So that's sort of a big answer to the question.
Gotcha. Now let's kind of delve a little bit deeper into where the understanding from like the left to the right on the question itself. And I think this really kind of boils down to the heart of the matter. Does abolish the police and defund the police really mean the same thing?
No, they don't. So defund the police, the idea behind defunding the police is taking services that are now handled by the police, like responding to a mental health emergency where a family can't control a person with a mental illness, as opposed to abolish the police. So defunding the police, for example, in Dallas, they have taken some of the money that they would normally have spent policing and they've diverted that to mental health experts. So if someone's having a mental health emergency, and you can think about all the different types of mental health emergencies, one of the big issues in our community and in our state is drug dependence. Do we want people who are not only having a mental health episode, but having some type of problematic behavior that's connected to drug abuse, drug substance abuse, whatever you want to call it, drug addiction, chemical addiction, do we really want that to be handled by a police person? If they're breaking in your house to steal something and they have a gun or a knife, maybe we do. But if they're not, is there a way to manage that without having to call the police in? 911 gets someone to show up as an armed force to respond to a problem. So defunding the police really is a conversation about what's the best way to deploy lethal force and lethal people who've been trained to make split-second decisions to respond with lethality to all circumstances. Is that what we want to spend our money on, or do we want to do something else? In some communities, the problems with the police are entrenched to the point where people feel like that there's no rehabbing the police. So when people say abolish the police, they really do mean get rid of the police. And what they're saying is they want to get rid of the type of policing that profiles people of color, that profiles poor people, foreign-born people, and basically looks at anyone who's suspicious as an enemy. You can go look at the story of the recent Kentucky State Police training that was done, and its reference to some phrases from Nazi Germany. And you realize very quickly, they're very serious about how they do their work. So the big conversation about defunding the police is really, how do we deploy the assets, but what are the policies and practices that need to be done away with? And I think a lot of communities really believe that the only way to do that, Portland, Oregon is sort of pursuing this path, there's some other communities that are really looking at completely dismantling the police and then reassembling them and their functions and their responsibilities in some other fashion.
Excellent. Now, you did touch a little bit on 911, and that actually kind of leads into the next question that I have. When we're talking about defunding the police, would that be a way of defunding essential departments like 911, or is it really just a matter of fund reallocation that needs to be focused on?
There are all kinds of 1-1 lines that are available in our community. So in Louisville, Metro United Way funds 911, but they also fund 311. So there are a lot of groups that fund 911. And you think about all the different emergencies that people might be having in their house. So they might be having a medical emergency, which hopefully gets someone like an EMT or fire department or something like that. Someone can have a house on fire. Someone may experience something and they're not sure what it is, so they're going to call the police, they're going to dial 911 to sort that out. So 911 is an emergency response, whereas 311 is a community network resource. So when you dial 311, a lot of times people have a question or need to help someone respond to a slow emergency. So think about 911 as a potential life-threatening emergency. You dial 911, they say, what is your emergency? Well, sometimes the emergency is a slow emergency that's boiling over, and that's where 311 can help. 311 connects you to community resources through Metro United Way. But a lot of the emergencies that 911 actually responds to as a full emergency is actually a slow emergency that's bubbling over. So a lot of us do want those emergencies to be tended to, but there a lot of times it's not the infrastructure in place to help deal with those emergencies. So defunding the police doesn't dismantle the 911 system. It may send a less lethal force into that situation. People are unpredictable. I think most people don't realize what healthcare workers deal with, what policemen deal with, and what school workers deal with. They deal with the broadest, deepest, most insane, crazy people in our society, and that's just not a well-known fact. So policemen, I think, feel really overburdened. We have two unions. We have a union for the police. We have a union for prisons. and for jails. And when you think about dealing with people who don't want to be arrested and don't want to be caught, and people who don't want to be incarcerated, that's a very, very hard job. So people ask the question, so does that mean that you defund corrections as well as defunding police? Maybe. Because we know that if you're a Black or Brown person, you're far more likely to be arrested and incarcerated for the same offense as a white person. So when we're talking about defunding the police, we're not just saying buying less shiny police cars and putting more boots on the ground in a literal sense. We're also talking about defunding the entire judicial system, which starts with people being arrested. A lot of people are not aware that in our country, if you're too poor to pay bail, you end up in jail, even if you're not guilty. I encourage your listeners to just Google the misidentified four. There were four young men who drove from St. Matthews to the West End, sitting on their porch, minding their own business. They got arrested and they spent 4 months in jail and missed a lot of opportunities for that. And this was after a wilding incident, so-called, at the Big Four Bridge downtown. And just go through all of the conversation, all the news reports, and think about, what if that was you? You know, we all believe that we're presumed innocent until proven guilty, but in reality, that does not happen all the time, especially if you're a Black person who lives in West Louisville. I think about Attica Scott. Attica Scott is a state representative now, was a Metro Council person. She went to Ferguson and did a lot of research and did some other work with people in Ferguson around the Michael Brown shooting, and was really, in a nice way, in a polite way, saying, don't kill our children, don't shoot our babies. And what she's saying is, don't use police money. This is money we pay for. Don't use that money to kill our babies. And the response from Bill Lamb from WDRB is to tell Attica Scott, a sitting council person and a Black woman, to shut up. And that, to me, just tells you where people's feelings are, where their sentiments are on this issue of defunding the police. What they're really saying is, we don't want to disturb the balance of power. We don't want to hold people accountable. If people get caught up in that, in all the framework of that, it's unfortunate, but it's just necessary for things to move on this forward.
I follow you. And you'd touched a little bit on unions in particular. And I know it's been a big deal here in Louisville lately with the police union, looking at the various reforms and involved there with the Louisville Metro Police Department. How do or do police unions serve as any kind of barrier to that kind of reform? And if so, how do they do that?
Well, labor unions are probably one of the best inventions around. It's not a slam on unions in general, but unions in general are labor associations where people join together to get the benefits that they need. They get vacation, they get certain workplace protections, they get salary adjustments, training. So unions can certainly be a positive thing. I'm a member of a union, so I understand the benefits of the union. The problem is when unions have more power than people do. When we hear the phrase serve and protect, we are not serving and protecting policemen. We are serving and protecting people. And under the law, everyone is supposed to have equal access and equal rights under the law. But what happens is when you have police unions that manage contracts in such a way that they're shielded from liability and shielded from responsibility, that's where the problems come in. So many times in larger cities, the unions have power over politicians. And that's true in other unions and other public union settings as well. And that's criticisms of unions all across the board. But where it's particularly important is when misconduct is known about. When misconduct is known about in a private employer, that person is typically terminated very quickly. There's usually a short process. Whereas in a union, under a union contract, you may have someone engaged in conduct that is completely unacceptable, and yet because of the process, they stay in their job or stay in their job longer than is desirable. So it's important to have workplace protections. That's why unions exist. But sometimes the power of those unions is too great. There's no responsibility. And there are ways that that conversation from the union has played out in a way in this recent conversation about whether Breonna Taylor's killer should be charged or not that are really crucial. We don't know enough about people. We've learned a lot from the Explorer sex abuse scandal. We've learned a lot from the Breonna Taylor shooting and from other incidents in Louisville. And there are lots of incidents where we've realized that the police department is not what it should be. A good example, taxpayers should be outraged that several police officers were able to put on their pay roster that they worked 24 hours a day for several weeks or months and hauled off all this overtime. So when we talk about defunding the police and the power of the union, it's not just the power of the union itself, but the hands-off approach that administrations of city governments have when it comes to police unions. They don't do the type of oversight. They don't have the type of responsibility. So part of that oversight and responsibility is administration, but the other part of that is police conduct and expectations of police. There were a lot of people who are big fans of Rudy Giuliani's search and stop, search and frisk policy in New York because they felt like it helped decrease crime. But unfortunately, it's a violation of the Constitution. We all have the right to walk down the street without explaining where we're going or what we're doing. And I think that's one of the basic liberties. So defunding the police and holding police unions accountable has a lot to do with our freedoms as Americans. It's the freedom from the intrusion of government. It's the freedom from being treated as a criminal when we're just exercising our rights. And really good example of this, I think, is what happened at First Unitarian Church when protesters were coming down. They were exercising their First Amendment rights to protest, and several people, including Attica Scott, her daughter Ashanti Scott, and Shamika Parrish Wright, other people were arrested, and they were targeted. So it was purposeful. It wasn't just that they were arresting people because they were breaking the curfew. But there's a lot of opportunity for us to think about how do we want unions to be held accountable? How do we want not just beat offers on the street, but people up the line and in the union who sort of foment a particular culture? How do we hold them accountable to be accountable to people?
I want to take a moment here to turn you on to another great podcast. Do you crave constant brain stimulation? Want to go on a head trip but lack a clear destination? What if there was a place you could always go, a theme park for intellectual escape? A place where you can expand your mind again and again and again? Well, I know a spot. It's a podcast called Open Loops, Conversations That Bend. Your host and chief looper, Greg Bornstein, along with many of his featured guests, share mind-blowing insights about the topics that take us away from it all. Magic, art, hypnosis, secrets, psychology, spirituality, conspiracy, the supernatural, and who and what we really are. It's a late-night talk show that for the shamelessly fringe. Available on all Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcast platforms. Now back to the show. You talked a little bit about government oversight and how that can be a little bit restrictive. That kind of leads me into my next question. There's been a lot of talk about surveillance cities. And honestly, I'm not entirely sure what a surveillance city is. And how does that pertain towards defunding the police?
Well, a lot of cities are looking carefully at budgets because the most expensive part of any city government is the cost of personnel. And there's a lot of liability and a lot of costs, particularly in fire and police. So some cities have actually gone to a surveillance city model where, no, there are less police on the street, but there are cameras everywhere. A lot of people are not aware that police are using Facebook and other social media to manage and monitor people without their knowledge. So people are getting on Facebook and they're talking about this or that, or they're posting videos about where they are. People are not aware of the technology that now lets a camera, a traffic camera, track your vehicle. So it reads your license plate. Think about going across the Ohio River Bridge. You're paying a toll. How do they know? Well, they can read your license plate, so they know where you were. Big Pipe, Big Data takes and aggregates that data and analyzes that data and can tell people where someone was. which is great if you are a TV show and you want to solve a mystery really quick, but terrible for people's personal privacy and freedom in real life. I don't want someone to know where I went, why I went there, how long I was, and when I came back. Not just because it's nobody's business, but because that makes us a police state. It may not feel like a police state when you're driving down the road, but when someone comes to knock on your door and accuses you of terrorism when you're not a terrorist, you just happen to be Muslim, and you happen to talk to people in countries overseas because they're your family, then it becomes very, very scary. So it's not just Homeland Security. We think Homeland Security and we think national security. It's local security. And there used to be a much finer division between national security and local security, but a lot of that has eroded. We have police now, since 2014, our SWAT team has military vehicles. Do we need somebody who's holed themselves up in a house because they're either having a mental health emergency or they're having some type of marital discord or whatnot? Do we really want a military vehicle driving down the street and cordoning off three or four blocks? We set up these scenarios in a surveillance city that make us insecure in ways that we don't even imagine. So think about social media, think about your cell phone, think about your private conversations. The ability for government to take pictures and other data and put them together to have a very complete picture of who you are, where you've been, who you've talked to, should make all of us feel very, very nervous. Lots of folks raise their eyebrows and point fingers when we talk about COVID-19 tracing, you know, contact tracing, but people have no idea what type of contact tracing is really going on. So let's just say you are a subversive person, you're a racial justice advocate. There are people out there who are looking at you in the same way that people felt uncomfortable with in the 50s when McCarthyism was alive and well. And the data shows that a lot of police departments are infiltrated with Nazis, with white supremacists. So there are people who can use that data and use it not for public good, but for public evil. Think about some of the big WikiLeaks conversations. You know, where did that, how did that data got collected? You know, government wants to focus on how it got released, but let's get real. How does that data get collected? Who's looking at that data? I don't think we really know the depth of it, but I am sure that we don't want our privacy invaded in that sense.
Excellent. Now, there's also, from what I understand, a movement to defund the military as well. How does that play into defund the police? Should it play into defund the police, or is that just two completely separate issues that don't really mix?
Well, I think defunding the military and defunding the police are very much related. We've seen over the last 20 years a significant increase in the militarization of police. The weapons they use, think about the protests that you saw downtown and the use of, look at the weapons that were being brandished by police and forces that we weren't really sure who they were, National Guard people. Think about David McAtee, how he died, where he died, the type of weapon he was killed with. Couldn't that and shouldn't that have been handled in a different way? So that was a militarized police force that showed up. That wasn't a constable type force, that was a militarized force. So that's an example when we talk about not funding the military. There are all kinds of grants that come from Homeland Security that get meted out to state governments and to metro governments, and lots of governments take advantage of money not thinking about what the consequences of it are for quality of life. So the other thing is that we don't really think about in military, but we think a lot about Black people. I'm a person of faith. I'm of Native American descent. I come from the Deep South. I've heard this thing about Black people all my life, and it's a mean, pejorative way of looking at Black people. Many people think that the term welfare queen, when they think welfare queen, they're talking about a Black woman. So people talk all the time about how it's unfair that people who don't deserve public welfare get this money. And that's a big mantra from people on the right. They talk a lot about social programs. They really make users of social programs look like the enemy. They have all these bad things to say about them. But nobody has those same questions about the military. We could take 1% of the money that we've lost through fraud, through military spending, and we could fund every food program, every social safety net program for 20 or 30 years. And that's just 1% of 1 year's budget. So the amount of money that we waste and spend on the military is just huge compared to the actual human need. And when you get right down to it, most of the crime we want to prevent is related to poverty. You know, there are people who are doing things that they wouldn't do if they had enough to eat, if they had adequate housing, and they had adequate transportation. So defunding the military and defunding the police is really a big question. Do we want to deploy our collective resources in a way that help everyone have enough, that create a bright, prosperous future for every child in the United States, regardless of where they were born? We founded this country with the idea that every child has the right to a free and appropriate public education. In grade school, I learned about these big plots of land that they basically, in every county, there was a plot of land, and that land was used to educate students. You could graze sheep on it, you could sell timber off of it, you could build a school on it. But the whole idea was, how can we have a democratic republic without people being well educated? And the gist of it is that we spend a lot of money on things that I don't think match our faith values or our American values. We should value education. We should value people's privacy, independence, and freedom. And the way we ensure and assure people's freedom is to make sure that the wealth that we have as a country is accessible to everyone. I would much rather take my collective resources and pay for several families to have heat, food, and clothing than to drop $1-2 million bomb in some country that I don't even know what our relationship with them is. So, you know, there's a lot of things to think about. There's no cheap military. We are a colonial empire as the United States. We have bases in all kinds of places in the world. We have all these covert operations, but we really don't think about how much it costs to just drop one bomb in Afghanistan or somewhere like that.
Okay. Now, we'll kind of wind down with one more question here. There are many folks that want to do the exact opposite of defunding the police. They want to increase their funding, especially in like marginalized communities, because they believe that that will actually help the police do their job better. What would be the kind of counter argument to that, or is do they have a point with that?
So I think cities have tried to employ a lot of strategies to help neighborhoods that are in need, and I'm not sure improving the number of police that you have resolves those issues as much as economic development resources. So you can take the money that you spend policing people, which assumes that people will be victims of crime, and turn that around. There's a lot of economic opportunity in West Louisville. West Louisville is always described in terms of its deficits and not in terms of its assets. West Louisville has tremendous assets. There are great businesses there. There are smart, intelligent people who need the economic benefits that they've been denied through redlining. There are business loans that a Black person can't get in West Louisville that a white person in East Louisville can. And it has nothing to do with the business or the equity that they have to borrow against. It has everything to do with where they live and where they're going to do business. So do I agree that people in West Louisville deserve equal protection under the law? Sure they do. What they don't deserve is people showing up and assuming because they drive a nice car and they're in West Louisville that they're a drug dealer. So there's a big difference in how we do community policing. We are way behind in Louisville, as in other cities, in racial equity in policing. Most of the scholars, most of the experts don't agree that simply hiring people of color solves the problem, because the problem is the culture, not the color of the people. That being said, it's not fair to a Latino, a foreign-born, or Black child to only see white policemen and white teachers. So, you know, it's a both and. You know, we do need people of color in policing. We need more women in policing. Men and women make mistakes. You know, police are not perfect, and sometimes I think we expect, you know, policemen to do all of this work and be held accountable if they screw up without giving them all the resources that they need.
All right, excellent. Well, Doug, thank you so much for taking the time and sharing all your thoughts on this. And do me a favor and tell us a little bit more about the Sowers of Justice Network.
Sowers of Justice Network has been around about 12 years. We are a faith-based organization, and we work on racial justice, food justice. We work on a lot of other justice issues. We're committed to active nonviolence. We hold regular forums. We had a recent forum about education, but racial equity, food justice, and rent justice are going to be one of the issues that we're going to spend a lot of time on. We are facing a food crisis and an eviction crisis, and we invite the community to join us in looking at these issues and responding to our calls to action.
Excellent. Where can one find out more about Sowers of Justice?
Sowersofjusticenetwork.org is our website. We have a Facebook page, and we have a Friends of Sowers of Justice Network. We partner with other organizations. We have a Wednesday event, so every Wednesday you can go to Facebook, and there's a live Facebook event that you can participate in.
All right, wonderful. Well, Doug, thank you again for so much for stepping into the hot seat and clearing up a lot of misconceptions about what defunding the police actually means.
I'm happy to do it, Ray. Thanks for the invitation.
Not a problem. And now a challenge to our listeners. If you too have a subject that you're passionate about and can speak some authority on, and you're not afraid to tackle some of the tough questions that you could be confronted with, please give us drop us a line here at Unsensitive. You could reach out through the Fearscape Media Network, or you could write me direct at rayrobwrites@gmail.com. And then maybe you'll be the next person on the show talking about the subject that you're passionate about. A special thanks to Ben Sounds for the use of the song Happy Rock, and of course the fine folks at Fearscape for giving me a venue. Thank you again for listening to Unsensitive. We'll talk again soon, and until then, keep that mind open.